Welcome to Slow Inside, where I hold conversations with healers, mystics, artists, and guides. Deep, rich, true conversations with those living slower inside. Long-form interviews, honest, real explorations. Not meant to teach, but to open, to explore and expand the way we think, see, and live. I'm your host, Daphne Cohn, and my guest today is Mara Branscombe. While we navigate crises like climate, politics, war, technology, poverty, inequality, we need humans who commit themselves fully to a life of presence, compassion, and care. Humans whose devotion becomes their offering, gifting us a way forward, led by fierce love and steadfast courage. Mara is one of those people. Mara is a mother, writer, yogi, artist, teacher, mindfulness leader, ceremonialist, and spiritual coach. She's been teaching for over 2 decades and hosting international wellness retreats and corporate mindfulness programs across the globe. She is the author of Ritual as Remedy, Embodied Practices for Soul Care, and Sage Huntress, Lover Queen, Access Your Power and Creativity Through Sacred Female Archetypes. Mara is also the creator of the Divine Matrix Oracle Deck. In this conversation, we explore the true nature of ritual and how intention can turn the ordinary into the sacred, how to meet the inner voice of not enough, the truth beneath the noise, midlife as awakening, the dance between freedom and discipline, and the tender strength of innocence returning through wisdom. May this conversation remind you that ritual doesn't require perfection or performance, only presence, that your body already knows the way, and that beauty, love, and wonder are not luxuries, but ways of staying alive to the soul of this world. So hello, Mara, and welcome to the Slow Inside podcast. It's just a delight to have you here.
Thank you, Daphne, for having me.
I want to begin. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things around this idea of ritual, for sure. And I pull some of what we're going to talk about from your book, Ritual as Remedy. And I want to start by saying that this book is an unbelievable resource. And what I've started to do is go through it one page a day because each page feels full of so much. And I want to be able to take it in and to integrate it. So I say that in part because as we go into this conversation, to know that whatever gets covered, it is just the tiniest bit of what we can actually touch, and we will go as deep with it as we can. So having said that, I do want to start with a quote where you said, "From all the work over all the years and all the practices and the meditations, the yoga, the rituals, I discovered that it's about weaving the rituals into the daily life practice that really matter most." So of course, we'll start with the most basic and important question of what is ritual and why it matters. And then we'll go from there.
Thank you. And thank you for honoring the book in its depth and the way in. I love how you describe that, one page at a time. Ritual is just like that, one thing at a time. And it is any act that is done with intention. So the smallest mundane things can become sacred rituals for us if we choose to align in that way in life. A ritual is something that takes us out of the ordinary and allows us into the sacred in a way where we see through the eyes of wonder, perhaps. We live through the lens of present moment awareness. And often what I have found is that brings a revival, a reassessing of any situation, a redreaming or a reimagining of the simple act of seeing the beauty in all things.
Okay, I want to start with this idea of the reassessing, the reimagining, the seeing the beauty, because this is so, okay, it's kind of a big concept that I'm about to go into, but I think it's really important. So we're in this time, and we're always in complicated times, but of course, right now seems particularly overwhelming in many, many ways. And there's two pieces here. One, the idea that ritual, how important really is it in when so much is happening? Does it really matter? But then the second piece of where ritual takes us, because so much of that fear and concern, at least from my perspective, lives in this mind that is forever churning out fears and concerns and worries. And then ritual seems to take us somewhere else that does exactly what you're talking about, reimagining, reassessing, wonder, inviting beauty. So can you speak to that aspect of ritual?
Where does ritual take us is what I received from that you just spoke of. And it's so great to bookend it, right? We begin with an intention. Let's say it's waking up in the morning. How do we begin our mornings? Well, if I set my intention even the night before and say, tomorrow morning, I will wake to my morning quiet reflection or meditation or whatever your practice is. And if one can follow through with that, and one cannot go to the phone first or go to the news first or even be in conversation, for example, with others. If we can tend to this inner life, this inner work of us right here and now without interruption, what happens is, first of all, our divine will gets activated, and our body loves that. You know, our body and our mind and our spirit says, you did it, you got there, you got to your morning practice, and something already sparks. Like the bright light inside your consciousness already gets a glow. It already turns on to perhaps a wider perspective into the lens of wonder, into the lens of positivity, into the lens of, I am here, you know, working on my work, working on self-regulation. Even that, so that small act of taking your 5-minute quiet morning practice. Where does that take us? That takes us into what I say in my morning practice is, what am I here to learn today? Show me a sign, send me a symbol. And who do I ask that to? I ask that to my own self, to my intuition. I ask that to creator, to the goddess, to the gods, to the spirit, whatever one believes in. That I become attuned and aligned in that moment of quiet reflection with the simple curiosity of, what am I here to learn today? How can I show up to be open to learn that? And that's where ritual takes us. It takes us on a journey, and sometimes it can be a really quick journey. And sometimes of course, it takes longer. But the steadiness of one's way of showing up is generative of one's soul evolution, I believe. And that's where ritual takes us.
It's interesting because as you were speaking, I could feel something in me softening. And so here's what's fascinating is this, so much of this is my work, and there is a way that is still, after all these years, so deeply in me of this like harsh voice that is telling me, even with getting up and doing the morning ritual that I do, and moving into yoga and bringing breath in throughout the day, and all these things, there is still this voice that is telling me it's not enough. It's just not enough. If you could like be present 24/7, if you were conscious of your breath every moment of the day, maybe then it will be okay. So I would love to hear how you meet this voice and how we can work on that gentleness when there is this intense drive, not for all of us, but for many of us, to like always be improving and never quite there.
Yes, true fact. Still the voice of not being enough, not getting enough work done in a day. This is so much of the culture we live in. And it is, I have been musing on this, so I'm glad you asked this question. The letting go, the word letting go is used and overused so much in our wellness culture. And yet, again and again, what I am curious about is this refinement of the letting go process. How do I let go of that voice when it comes up? And then how do I tend the true voice of participating in the desire of the enough? So this play of asking oneself, what is true in this moment? This becomes an anchor inside daily life. Mindfulness, ritual, a beginner to all of this work, someone who's, you know, not done any of the work, is we can ask, what is true in this moment? And if I can call it what is true in this moment of that discomfort you're talking about, that intense drive, that push culture, which is a lot of times toxic, capitalist, masculine, patriarchal energy that's coming through. So in this moment, if I can say and call out, what is true for me in this moment is I feel this intense drive that it's still not enough. Well, what can I do to call out what's true? I can call out the bodily sensations. What does my body feel like when it's not enough? What's happening? What are the conditions in my environment? Do I need a break? Do I need to go outside and get some fresh air and clear? How can I have this self-talk of softening in this moment? Because ultimately what I have found and am curious about is, where do we rest in the day? And then where do we pick it back up? And I know that's really hard, because for me, I'm a person, you know, that has immense drive, and I've had to work on this a lot in my life. The difference between the push over and the push into. And the push over is, I find when I'm pushing myself over, is I'm overworking. I'm over functioning. And the push into is getting into the heart of what's most important by calling out what's true. Well, what's true in this moment is I have a desire to finish that project. I have a desire to go deeper in my meditation. I have a desire to rest. And when we can get into that desire, I think we can circle all the way back to the beginning, what we just called forward, which was reassessing, reimagining, redreaming through sacred acts or through simple acts. We can even call them a walk in nature or in the park. A 10-minute walk to clear the energy field and to remember that we are enough.
So one piece that I'm hearing in that is, and you mentioned it when you talked about the, you know, asking these questions, like whatever question one may ask of themselves in the morning, but listening for the answer, which is just that, the listening. And that's what I heard you speak to just now a lot, Mara, is this like asking these questions And then listening, what is the desire? Where am I at? And whether it's to decipher between, pushing over, pushing into, whether it's time to rest, whatever that is. And even in the ritual of asking the question, what is this day for, or what am I opening to, or whatever that question may be, how are you exercising, practicing the kind of listening that allows you to both discern between voices that are more about programming versus our true voices, that voices that come more from programming, like the patriarchal capitalistic system that we're born into, and one's true voice, and the more subtle voices that come from nature, or we don't know where, we just hear them. How do you work on that? How do you practice that kind of listening?
A lifelong journey, I would say, and we may work at it each day, like this great project, like this oracle, this great masterpiece of our spirit, of our soul. Daphne, we all come in with our own work to do. We all come in with our gifts. As we are born into this world, we are born with our gifts, and we're also born with perhaps some of our core teachings, our core lessons in life. Sometimes those lessons, I believe, they come from past lives. They come in through our ancestry. And part of the listening journey, should we be so blessed as to take up the invitation, or to hear the call for the invitation, is to check out what makes you feel most alive and well, and what got you there. For example, some of us feel most alive and well when we're creating. Some of us feel most alive and well when we've worked our physical body to a place where we feel absolutely clear in our mind. Some of us feel most alive and well when we're connected to people and relationships and community, or when we're learning new things. So I think that's what I would, and I'm musing on this a lot, and I'm writing about it right now, which is, what is your operating system? We all have an operating system, one, with our gifts, and two, the core lessons that we are here to learn. And I like to think about it like this rainbow bridge from gifts to core teachings. And by core teachings, those are some of the things that have been hard for us. Working with people for the past 20 years in intuitive counsel and spiritual work through, the practices of opening into yoga and meditation and energy body awareness and dance and art, has been the anchors. Those practices for me have been the anchors personally in which I can feel most alive and well. And then I can see and listen to the places that need my attention most, which could be the lack narrative, the I am not good enough, I am not worthy, I am not abundant, I am this or that. So that are the, those are the ways in which I listen, is also when I hear what's not true. So let's say I'm running my dog in the forest, which I do most often, and I call it, I go on my spirit runs, and I have no devices. And I as I go, of course my dog needs to be exercised well. And so bonus, I go with her, and I also set the intention to clear my energy field. through the simple act of nature gazing, of being present with the trail and with self and with my dog. And I have a spirit tree, I call her mother tree. I go to her and I give her a big giant hug, and I spend some time and I ask myself to receive a clearing. I support the tree in a way with my own energy by showing up with love and compassion. We have this relationship, and every time I receive some sort of message by looking up at the branches, by looking down at the earth, by seeing the change of the seasons. And often I will receive insight on the listening piece, on how to best discern what is my energy and what is not my energy. And that will support this, you know, question that I'm going to circle back to, is like, how do we really listen? For some of us, just going into meditation without having any physical form or clearing, you know, of physical exercise. People go to the gym, they go on bike rides, they go on runs, they go on walks, whatever it is, they do their yoga practice. But for a lot of us, we need to work through physical stuff to get the mind to a place to be open enough to go, aha, I have been living by that lack narrative of I'm not worthy. And in this moment, I'm seeing that. And in this moment, I'm choosing to empower myself to return to my true light in the here and the now. I lay that story down just for today.
What's the difference between I lay that story down, or I clear my energy field when you go out on your runs and you go to clear your energy field, or you consciously lay this way of thinking aside and turning towards it and saying, I'm going to meet you and work with you. Is that when those thoughts arise, are they something that we need to work with? Or is it just really like, actually, no, they're just not truths and we can set them aside?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at here, is what you just spoke of, the latter. So I think that we're in, as I support, I've supported myself in the work and my clients, what I've seen is that the same story keeps getting repeated again and again and again and again, and the same narrative, and it comes in different forms, but it's a similar narrative. So what I'm suggesting here is, well, for one, disclaimer, yes, we do the work on the big things. Sometimes we need to get support and counsel. And yet, when I ask that question, what is true in this moment, we can get a direct response from the inner realm that actually is not that story that we keep repeating. That's what I'm trying to get at. So what is true in this moment as I hug this tree? I'm hugging the tree. I'm looking up. I'm in nature. I'm running and I'm, you know, happy because I'm getting my exercise. My dog is happy. I see the leaves changing colors. They're absolutely stunning. The trail in the forest is, you know, showing me the open way forward. That kind of present moment awareness is what I feel gets us out of continuing to carry the story. And here's the thing. When the story comes up, you know, when I get home after the run or I'm in my work and there it goes again, my mind starts talking how I'm not good enough again, or I didn't do enough again, or I'm not worthy, then perhaps I am a little bit quicker to let it go because I have already been practicing the letting go more often. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And then another thing, and this is only because I feel like this is honestly, this is a question that I'll just ask it, which is just because of all the conversations that I'm in, which is we look around and we say, wow, trees, the leaves are vibrant and changing color, and the sun is shining and it's beautiful and all of this is happening and this is what's actually happening. This is right here in this moment in the world that I'm living in. And then there is this other conversation that is really prevalent right now, which is, and the world is falling apart and there's craziness happening everywhere. And so again, forgive me for often giving you a two-pronged question because it's a lot to hold, but I just, it's what's here right now, which is one, like how we meet that part that rises up and like even feels like, oh, I shouldn't even be appreciating the beauty necessarily. So there's the permission piece of both of actually giving ourselves that permission to appreciate the beauty in the life without the guilt, without feeling like somehow we're abandoning all those who are suffering. So there's that piece. And there is also this is not, I just want you to speak to this, like the importance of acknowledging the beauty as a human on the planet at this time.
I think perhaps we can speak about it as a vibration of these energies. So, and I hear you, and this is, there will always be both. This is non-duality. There will always be both. There will, and especially right now, we are seeing great suffering in the world. And that has a vibration to it. And we tend to the causes where we can and when we can. And the other vibration is the beauty we see in the world. And how can we navigate and human through these frequencies? You know, it's a really big question, Daphne. I don't think there's any easy answers here. But what I will say is if we are tuning into the vibration of beauty on a daily basis, and maybe some listeners right now would appreciate more if we tune into the energy of compassion, if we tune into the energy of love, if we tune into the energy of joy, if we tune into the energy of present moment awareness, if we can do that and fill ourselves up with that in any way possible, then we will be more available to put our energy towards causes that matter, towards causes that light us up, which is, you know, how we get to servicing the world through our gifts.
Yeah, that's great. I want to share something from your book in a minute that I actually just read, but before that I read this morning. But before I do that, I am curious when, because you mentioned a couple times about how you are writing to about our operating systems and how you've been musing on this a lot. I'm wondering if there's anything that you want to share about why this is so important to you right now, and if there's something that's important to share with us, me and the listeners.
Thank you. Well, I think this comes from this path that I've been taken on, which is the writer's path. And that was surprising to me. I didn't know I was going to be on this journey. So as you know, I wrote Ritual as Remedy, and that's, it came to my second book, which was Sage Huntress Lover Queen, which is around the female archetypes and how to embody the feminine, which brought me to the Oracle deck, which was, you know, my latest project. And so these three projects, I think, are leading me towards this very question of how can I understand more fully the human operating system and give tools and rituals and practices and meditations to tend to these things that we are talking about right now, which is navigating our gifts and navigating our wounds, let's say, or our core teachings, so that we can find this inner compass of beauty, of steadiness, of love, of soul service, of being able to service our soul in a way that feels fulfilled. That's what I'll say there, and that's an investigation I'm working on right now.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let me find. Yeah, hold on a minute. As I get older, I gotta get out my glasses as I.
Oh, I just got glasses too.
It's a new thing, and it's
Oh,
interesting to see the things that come up around it.
I know, right?
Yeah. So let's see if this was what was coming up. You wrote, this is early in the book, but you say, once you give yourself permission to live a spiritual life in the form of a human body, the divine timings, the omens, the helping and compassionate spirits, the creator, the angels, the gods and goddesses, whatever your personal belief is, the spiritual energies awaken and journey alongside you to support you in fulfilling your wildest dreams. You begin to see, sense, observe, and feel how you can attune to the signs and symbols around you. You can open up to the alchemy of spirit sending you messages. You begin to understand how and when to let go of toxic energies, overcome fear and anxiety, strengthen your personal boundaries, and do the work it takes to stay in alignment with your own personal mission in life. I would love to hear a little bit of your personal experience with this opening up and what it looks like for you to be guided to have this support in fulfilling your dreams, in fulfilling and helping you stay aligned with your personal mission in life.
From a young age, I was gifted with a best friend whose mother was a pagan witch. I grew up in a very conservative environment, non-religious, actually, and the gift that my parents did offer, among many things, I have incredible parents, they offered us the gift of nature, being in nature a lot. And that love of nature, combined with learning about the pagan Celtic wheel of the year, the marking of the equinoxes, the solstices, honoring the full moon and the new moon. When I was 17, I was, welcomed into that community of the pagan community. Changed my life. And what it did for me, it opened me to a whole nother world that I had no idea existed, but I always felt that there was something deeper for me to connect with. And that became my journey of opening to, at 21, going to India for a year, studying yoga. I was so blessed to have these initiations, at a younger age. And I say that not to, look back for your listeners and say, well, I never had that, or I, it's never too late to open yourself to the energies that are present. And I know that life is very challenging and that there's grief and there's hardship. And sometimes it feels like we're underwater. And how could I ever be open to an awakening when I'm underwater? And yet, if we show up to one act a day that is for you to either experience some kind of, I call it soul care, which is some people call it self-care, but some kind of act where we're like, it's nourishing. It's beyond the task list. It's beyond the multitasking. And, a lot of us didn't learn this. I mean, some of us were made to go to church and then we no longer do that. But where is the faith now? And so now we have to build the faith. And however you can find it, whether you do a recorded meditation, whether you do a recorded yoga class, or you get out in nature, especially at midlife, for a lot of us, this midlife, which once was known as a crisis, I'm calling it, and a lot of folks out there, you've read a lot about this, it's an awakening. It's a chrysalis. It's like reimagining the second half of your life or wherever you're at right now. To sit down and get into, well, let's think about my life as an open road before me. And let's lay down this lack narrative and this hardship. And let's reimagine what's possible. And that's the kind of awakening that I'm talking about. And so you must have good imagination. I would begin with, let's go back to the inner child. Perhaps reading some, stories and fairy tales and myth. And this kind of gets us into reimagining and enlivening the imaginal world. I feel like creativity is such a big piece in this. Because it's actually this act of divine will to say that we're not just doing life as the mundane, we're not just checking off the boxes, we're not just checking off the lists of things to do. Because if you live your whole life like that, it may feel a little empty. It may feel like you're missing something. And a lot of us get bored easily. And then, where are people going? They're going to social media for their entertainment. And that's going to get boring too. That's going to feel unfulfilled at some point. So it has to be some sort of, either you're learning something new. That's the awakening. You're learning to knit for the first time. That's an awakening.
Okay, so there's a question that's rising up that is very different from something I thought I was going to ask, which is I would love to hear, because I know you've talked about turning 50, you've talked about being in this other, like, just now you're talking about the midlife awakening. This is very much on your mind, and I would like to hear if your experience or what your experience is around what seems to be something that happens, at least for me, but I think for other women as well, is there is definitely a stepping into some other phase of life. It does feel like stepping into this wiser, elder phase of life. And simultaneously, there's either a returning or a remembering or something of the innocence of this young child that we once were. They both seem to be coming alive more strongly now. I don't know if that's just me or if that's something that you've noticed or experienced, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I'd love to share my thoughts on that. So I think you're right on point there with this sage elder wisdom that comes. It's a blessing to me to feel this, caring less about what other people think, focusing more on actually what's true for me, because that's that question I keep asking, what is true in this moment? That is the gift I feel with aging. We don't always get to feel that in our 20s and in our 30s when we're, pretty, the ego is still being formed and fixated on, other people's impressions so much. And now we get to this place where, we've grown so much into our soul skin that perhaps this elder wisdom allows us to see a wider angle on life. I picture the elder, at the top of the mountain, seeing this wild, expansive landscape and taking in that beauty with this quiet power within. Now, the innocence, the childlike energy that you're speaking of, that's the maiden archetype. And the maiden archetype is wild and carefree and has gone through the dark night of the soul, very much Persephone's journey, gone through the dark night of the soul and risen up from the ashes like the phoenix rising. And the ultimate energy and gift of the maiden is to hold pure innocence. And so we can hold these two energies of the elder, the sage, and this inner child or the maiden, and they can communicate with one another to enrich this season of our life. And this pure innocence in every wisdom teaching, mystical teaching across the map in ancient times, and I would say in hope that it would be also contemporary times, is that we can return to a state of innocence in which we were born with that true light that we were born with, the bright light inside of our consciousness, that we have journeyed all these years, all these seasons of our life, all that has happened, all the ups and downs, to perhaps as we enter into this season, to hold the flame of pure innocence. To me, that's ultimate truth, ultimate love, and ultimate joy.
Just before moving on, when you say ultimate truth, ultimate love, ultimate joy, what do you mean by that?
I mean, if you were to strip away everything, you have nothing, everything is gone, including your ego. Maybe it's at the end of life. Maybe you're crossing over that at the end there, or maybe it's the beginning, or this season you're in right now, is that there, that you have touched upon this sense of deep love within, deep acceptance of you, deep awakening and opening simply by remembering and reclaiming your true light, your true innocence. And by that, like, you know, innocence, it's really is that we're able to release all judgment of self and others. And so that returns us to that question. And I'm going to circle back, Daphne, because I love all these questions you're asking. I'm going to circle right back right now to saying, you saying, well, how do you discern? How do you really listen? Well, in that moment of asking oneself, how do I really listen? Even using your imaginal realm to see that everything is gone, including your ego. And what's most important to you in this holding of your truth? And for me, when I ask that question, and I may never get there in my life, and I am, you know, working on it every day. I am definitely a body of work every day. Is that if I was to be able to hold the innocence of love, the innocence of joy, the innocence of truth in its pure form, that is what I pray for.
Do you think that the cynicism that is really alive right now, a lot of the mistrust, the skepticism, do you think some of that is a way that we, in quotes, protect ourselves against the innocence? Like if the innocence may actually feel a little bit threatening, and so the cynicism is what rises up to keep us at a bit of a distance from it.
Absolutely. And it keeps us away from our own vulnerability, because when we're vulnerable, we may feel, you know, if we haven't done the work on ourselves, right, then the vulnerability piece may feel like someone, it's unsafe, or someone's, you know, it's an attack on me. This, I've seen it across the board right now, what's going on in the world. It's what I feel is that people are turning into themselves to protect themselves, and they're just managing because it's wild out there. It's crazy out there. It's like, how could we be in 2025, almost 2026, and this is what's happening with all our technology, with all this, you know, advancement that we've made? There's this retrograde in humanity that's happening. And that, of course, would make someone feel that they need to protect themselves. So I am seeing that, and I'm witnessing it. And it, when we put on those, that sage lens, we can actually see why. We can make more sense of it. And I think that brings more compassion to us, so that we can You know, if you're called to this work, there's a shamanic expression, and it is this: when spirit calls, I answer, and when I call, spirit answers. So there is a relationship one builds with self, with intuition, with the divine, and whatever your name for that is. And if we can build that relationship, that is vulnerable. That's an act of vulnerability. You don't have to be vulnerable necessarily with another person and a relationship, although if you can, that's wonderful. But a lot of us on this path, if we can start to form this relationship within ourselves and be vulnerable with it, it's going to help us understand really what's going on in a greater sense, not in ego, not in I know more than you, but in compassion. And just before I end, I'm going to give you an example, because I did a ceremony yesterday for myself for this season of my life. I turned 52, almost, you know, just under a month ago. And I was leading retreat right after. So I was, you know, now I'm just integrating. I'm welcoming in. What are the teachings for this season of my life? What is my operating system right now? What needs to be shed so that I can invite in what I'm ready to grow into? And so I did a ceremony by myself with my mother tree. My dog was present, and it brought me to tears. And I was praying out loud. I was calling in the directions, and my whole body was warm. And I was asking for support. I was sharing with the forest what I was letting go of. I was speaking with my tree. And these kinds of acts can support us in this vulnerable state, this divine will activation. And then we can start to perhaps just see and navigate a little more of, one, how can I service the bright light in my consciousness? And two, how can I share that with the world?
It's interesting because in you saying all of this, it's actually clarifying something for me that I've not articulated. Well, I haven't known to articulate it to myself. So, which is, I've said to my husband many times recently, like, oh my gosh, I just feel like I keep having to amp up my practices to like stay here. And so I'm bringing more of them into the day, and I'm like consciously weaving more and more of my practices in throughout my day. And I had been perceiving it as, oh my gosh, I just like, it feels like it's taking more and more work, more and more presence to be present. Mm-hmm. But when I hear you speak, I'm like, oh, another way to hold this is that it's actually the, because I am practicing more and more, it's building me into this stronger, these aren't the best words, but I've just not said this aloud before, like, but this human that is becoming more fortified, like for whatever comes, but that the demand that I feel to practice more is then turning me into someone who can meet what comes with more strength, because I keep, you know, exercising every day, going to the spiritual gym every day, that it's making me stronger and stronger. And I hadn't thought of it that way. So that is another way, like the way that you're practicing, the way the level of intention, of intensity, is what also allows you to be in the world as it is, spinning wildly about. So, yeah.
Well, I like that word fortified, you know, becoming more fortified. And I think that's it. So, and also spontaneity. Can I bring that in? Spontaneity. is such a gift. And it's a skill to learn. And so that's why, I say to people, call out loud what you want and pray out loud, do it in the bath. And if the word pray doesn't work for you, hugging your tree in the forest, in the bath, in your meditation seat, dancing, in your kitchen, like no one's watching, all of that. If you speak out loud, I am releasing this. I am inviting in this. I often find I'm so surprised at what comes forward. Sometimes I never even knew what I was holding on to. And yet I cleared my channels by doing that simple act, and it's spontaneous. And so some people sing it out. Some people, journal, write, make wild art. It's like if we can return to a little more of this kind of rugged spontaneity, nothing has to be perfect, it can be messy. If we can guide ourselves through that, we're more likely to keep up with a current operating system so that we're not carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders and we're not feeling pressure to have to sort through all of that, because that's almost impossible. And I give each and every one of you listening a permission slip right now to practice the art of releasing, to invite in. You may say that to yourself 5 times a day. I release the conversation I just had with my partner that was hurtful on both sides. I welcome in love.
Love that. That's great. Okay. I'm aware of the time and needing to bring this to a close, but I really did want to speak to this because this was something I heard you say and I loved it as soon as I heard it, which you said, it takes discipline to be a free spirit. And I wanted to hear about what it means to you to be a free spirit and what that kind of discipline looks like.
And I will quote Gabriel Roth, who said that. So, Gabriel Roth is the founder of the Five Rhythms Ecstatic Movement and a wonderful dance teacher. And she said, it takes discipline to be a free spirit. And that is something I have worked with probably my whole life. And that's probably why I lit up so much when I first received that message. And I was a gymnast growing up, so I was an a child athlete. I had a lot of discipline, and yeah, I was also born a hippie. Yeah, so I had this. I feel so lucky, I had some lucky stars came down upon me and gifted me with this art of being. I'm also a Virgo, so yeah, I have this. I love systems and disciplines and such. So, yeah, what it means for me is show up for the practice, whatever it is, and be free inside of it. So, yeah, we can have like, it's like we have boundaries so that we can play inside that container.
So the boundaries being these acts of discipline, like the practices, the rituals, the systems, and then the playing being flexible within it so that whatever moves us in that, whatever is most alive, whatever has us really touch that truth, that love, that joy can come into that space, that we can meet it and move with it, knowing that we have the boundaries of these rituals and systems. That's what you're saying.
That's it. And circling back once again is when you asked, well, how do you know what the awakening is? Or how do you know what the true voice is? And I would say it's that. When we relax into, when we build the structure, we build the house, we build our temple, and then we get to be inside of it, that sense of, it's like a sense of safety. We lay our guard down. We become vulnerable. That vulnerability, that leads to in that intimacy leads to the awakening, I would say. The gift of what's ready to come through in that moment. It doesn't always have to be this profound thing. It could be this simple laughing at myself for taking myself so seriously all the time. You know, that the tears that come through when I did my ceremony in the forest, because an energy just came right in to hold me and to warm me and to release all that didn't serve. So it, yeah, that's it.
And it also makes me think like, oh yes, that's the beauty of where masculine meets feminine, like the masculine of these containers that hold us, and then we get to dance and play and be spontaneous within them. And yeah, I love that. So as we come to the close here, I'll have a final question for you. But first, can you share with listeners like the best places to find you, what is up, what you'd just like to people to know about?
Sure. So my website is my best way, marabranscombe.com. We've talked about ritual as remedy a lot, and the second book to that is Sage Huntress Lover Queen on the female archetypes, and that will support a lot of folks in tuning into the operating system, to seeing where shadow might be ruling over certain parts of yourself, where you can learn how to release or work with that shadow actually for empowerment. And then my third project right now that's just out for 1 month now in the world is an oracle deck. It's a 56 card oracle deck and guidebook based on the sacred feminine and the archetypes. It's really that was a 3 year heart and soul journey that is independently published. So that's a really special project for me. One other thing I'll say is I have an online community called Spirit Circle where I offer classes, rituals, and meditations. And I have my annual retreat in Mexico coming up March 7th to 14th, 2026. So all those things I would love to share. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Okay, I end with the gratitude and then a question, but I'm actually going to end with two questions because I just have two things that I feel I need to ask. But first, I will say the gratitude. It's always amazing to me meeting someone, being in conversation with someone who, as you have, I feel like you have given and give every part of your being over to this work, which is also your devotion, which is also your life. And that in doing this, you become both like the shore and the boat. Like you're like the lighthouse out in the ocean for us to find so that we all right, that's possible. And you're also this the shore, this safe place that we can stand and take refuge in terms of the teachings and all the different ways that you offer your wisdom in the world allows, at least for me, like a way that my nervous system can relax, just knowing not only am I not alone in this world, but there's guidance that will take me as far as I want and willing to go. So I'm so grateful for the depth of your practice over these many years, in the course of a day, and whatever is to come, just your continued commitment. And like I said, and discipline and devotion, it matters tremendously. So thank you, Mara.
Daphne, what a joy to sit in conversation with you. I loved your questions. I've received a lot from being in conversation with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, like I said, I normally ask one question, but I gotta ask this question, this first one, and then I'll finish with a different one. But which is, when your intuition leads you somewhere uncomfortable or inconvenient, how do you stay with it? How do you honor it?
I would write it down, like the message that I received anyway, so that I can start to sort out again what is true in this moment. And then I would ask my intuition and support from myself and my guides for more clarity. And sometimes that would even take a day and a night or a week or, you know. But that the seed doesn't have to alter your course. So the seed of my intuition, if it comes in and it's uncomfortable, I can allow it to live without judgment, without fear. And here's the thing, your intuition doesn't come with a backstory. So intuition is not something that happened in the past or something to fear from the future. And so when I know that and I practice that, then I can trust that it may take some time to sort out what that message really means, and may it be expressed at the right time.
Great. That's great. And so to close, what are you most curious, excited, enraptured, or called by in this next season that is unfolding in your life? What is that? What's most alive for you in this season?
A new writing project that I'm working on is most alive. It is also a struggle, and that does excite me in terms of being curious as what is going to come through in this writing. Is it just for myself? Is it for others? And that is the act of creativity that most lights me up right now, in going deep in myself in this winter season coming.
And any final words that you want to share with anyone listening?
Well, I will share, I pulled the transcendence card before we started our interview, Daphne, and this is the mystic archetype, and it's very short. I will read it to you because this helped me set my intention also for our conversation. Transcendence. I set clear intentions and release final outcomes. Deep down, I have always known the transcendent power of my visions.
Beautiful. That is a
You're
beautiful place to end. Thank you so much, Mara.
welcome, Daphne. Thank you.
If this conversation has moved you or inspired you and you feel called to share this episode with someone else, please do. For all show notes and past episodes, and to learn about all offerings, go to daphnecohn.com. If you want to subscribe to this podcast, you can do that over on iTunes or Spotify, and you can review it over at iTunes. If you'd like sacred words, living rituals, and somatic practices that guide you gently through a fast and fraying world, check out my Substack, Slow Inside. And thank you for listening.